Gizmo here. It's about 4:30. We're going to go ahead and get started. So I want to welcome everyone. Thanks for coming and spending your last session here. Hope you had a good tech ed. I know the party's the only thing that I'm standing between you and, so I'm going to try to finish this session on time, and we'll get you to the party, and you guys can have some fun tonight. So I'm Neil Axelrod. I'm a principal technology specialist here in the Southeast U.S. Florida's part of the greater Southeast District, so a lot of my customers are in Florida. I'm based in Atlanta. Work with a lot of the big Office 365 customers, names like Coca-Cola, Home Depot, Lowe's Home Improvement, Burger King, some of the folks that you've probably heard of before. So I'll be walking you through configuring the hybrid configuration wizard, or configuring Hybrid Exchange the easy way is the official. So some of the things that we're going to go through today, and what I'm hoping that you'll take away, be to understand how the hybrid configuration engine works, understanding some of the pitfalls, some of the common errors that people run into, and hopefully not repeat those. Knowing about the dependencies, so key to getting hybrid configured is really getting Exchange 2010 configured, okay? It's having a healthy on-premises environment. It's setting up all the things that you need on the CAS, on the hub transport, things like your public certificates, making sure that your DNS names are correct, and checking all those with the remote connectivity analyzer and the other connection tools that you've got to make sure that you're ready to go to a hybrid configuration. Otherwise, it will be much harder than it really needs to be. So I'm going to demo for you, and you'll see that it's really not that difficult as long as you have those things set up and they are ready to go. So the agenda, we'll look at some of the options for migration, and hybrid's definitely not the only option that you've got, so I just want to be sure that you're aware of the others. We'll do a little bit of an overview of what you get when you're in a hybrid, how the new Service Pack 2 deployment process works, how the hybrid configuration wizard works, and then finally, some of the things to be aware of and to avoid. So let me just see a quick show of hands. How many of you today are running Exchange 2010 and thinking about enabling a hybrid with Office 365? Okay. How many of you already have one configured? Okay, good. So getting the information before is always good. So some of the other ways that you can potentially migrate to Office 365 and Exchange Online are using cutover migration, using a staged migration, right? So cutover gets you there quickly. It's really meant for smaller organizations with fewer mailboxes. Staged Exchange migration is for larger organizations or mid-sized organizations that want to get completely to the cloud, but do it in less than a cutover. You want to take your time, stage those moves, and do them over a period. And then finally, hybrid. And hybrid's not only a migration method, but it's also for mid to long-term coexistence. How many of you have heard of Exchange Online Archiving? Okay, do any of you have that deployed in your environment today? Okay, just a couple. So EOA is really that case where hybrid is going to live for some period of time. It's not just a migration method. It's not just a way to do some kind of a short-term coexistence. It's a long-term coexistence that allows you to have, for those that are not familiar, your primary mailbox is on-premises and your archive mailbox is in the cloud. And that's called Exchange Online Archiving, and it retails for $3.50, which is a pretty good price when you consider that you get an unlimited archive in the storage and everything else. So if you haven't thought about that, that may be something that you want to look into. From a hybrid deployment point of view, mailbox moves, as you'll see, some good benefit there to do remote move requests. And if you think about what are those decisions that you want to look at and who would fit into one of those three types of migration methods, the first pivot's really around the organizational size. How many mailboxes do you want to move? Think about what kind of time frame do you have? Are you trying to do this very quickly? Are you doing this over a period of time? And what kind of features do you need during this period of migration? Do you need to have full free busy coexistence where users that are using cloud-based mailboxes and users that have on-premises-based mailboxes can share free busy? Or do you just want something that's quick and that gets them there without too much fuss? So based on those different pivots, what we tend to really see is that the cutover tends to be more for those smaller organizations who don't need as many features and want to get there quickly. Staged gets you to a little bit bigger organizations that want to stage things a little more judiciously, but they want a few more features. And then finally, hybrid, which is what we'll be talking about, which is really about maintaining the highest possible fidelity between the two environments and moving the mailboxes to the cloud over time. So some of the differences here when you start thinking about staged. Now, for those, anyone here who has experience using the BPOS, Exchange Online in Business Productivity Online Suite? Okay, just a couple of you. The migration method there was very similar to what's in the staged Exchange migration, where you could move users up to the cloud, you could do it by putting directory synchronization in place, by moving the users, and then there was some things that took place within the directory to flip the users to mail-enabled users from mailbox-enabled users. So stage migration gets you there, gets you that unified GAL, but you don't get all the other things that you see that are checked off in the hybrid column, things like free busy, things like mail tips, things like the online archive capability, if you enable that, or more importantly, the mailbox move and the lack of a need to re-download the OST. Let me explain that for 1 second. Because the mailbox GUI doesn't change when you move the mailbox using hybrid, the user and their Outlook client does not have to re-download that OST. So if you've got a very large mailbox, there's no impact on the network when the user's migrated. Based upon previous inter-org migrations and using the staged migration, there would be that re-download of that information that would happen right after the user's moved. So a quick summary of some of the things that you do get and some of the things that you don't get. As I mentioned, you get almost, near parity from a feature and experience point of view. Users that are on-premises, users that are in the cloud share very similar features, very similar experiences. Seamless interaction from the standpoint of people that are in the cloud and people that are on-prem not necessarily knowing that they are. So as an example, I'm part of Microsoft's internal Office 365 hybrid deployment. So I've got a mailbox in the cloud. I work with thousands of people who still are on our on-premises deployment. And I don't know who is and who isn't in the cloud, and I'm presuming they don't know that I'm in the cloud. It just, everything works, and it's very seamless. That's the goal that the hybrid configuration has, is to not make the user aware that there's any difference between my mailbox and your mailbox if we're not on the same system. Some of the things that are not supported, so that you're aware of them and can begin planning for them, mailbox permissions are migrated, but they're only invoked when both users are moved to the cloud. So for example, if I'm an executive and I have an administrator that I've given delegated permissions to, so he or she can manage my calendar and my inbox, if you move me, the executive, to the cloud and leave my administrative assistant on premises, those permissions break. When the administrative assistant is migrated, those permissions will then be in effect again. So it is important to know who's got those permissions and whether or not you need to batch people and move them at the same time. Migration of send as permissions for non-mailbox recipients is another thing that you'll have to be aware of. And an example of this would be if I have a group At Microsoft, we have several groups where we allow the group to actually send a message. It could be the legal administrators group or the HR group. Give send as permissions to that so people can then log on, send as that group. When that group is migrated, those permissions are no longer going to be there. So you have to manage those now in the cloud. So it's important to understand who has those permissions, what groups have them, and be very diligent about recreating those. Currently, the default directory sync and the architecture with hybrid only supports one Active Directory forest connected to one Office 365 tenant. We do have some other ways through Microsoft services and through some customized deployment that we can potentially look at customers with multiple forests, and we are doing that. But by default, if you set up directory sync, it's from one Active Directory forest to one Office 365 tenant, and hybrid does also require that same one-to-one. Public folders, which I know, we've been kicking them around now for how long? Long, long time. When I first started working with Exchange, it was Exchange 4.0 back in 1996, and public folders then were kind of exciting, and they were new, and it was great. And 5.0, 5.5, and we said, maybe we'll do something with them, and, they're still here with us. But we don't have them available for you in Exchange Online. So one thing that you have to do is think about what public folders are currently used for. If you have logic, if you have users that have applications, if there are dependencies that require folks to access public folders, don't move those mailboxes until you work around those dependencies. Okay? Because once the user's in the cloud, they do not have access back to those public folders. One thing that we do offer, though, as a workaround is we offer shared mailboxes in the cloud. So Exchange Online has shared mailboxes that we do not charge additionally for. As long as you're a licensed user, you can access them. And so there may be ways that you can work around public folders by moving data to a shared mailbox. But definitely look at those possibilities and see what you may need to do before you move the mailbox. And lastly, one of the biggies to keep in mind is we don't have the ability to segment address lists and set up address book policies and custom address lists in the cloud. So everyone's going to see a flat representation of the GAL. You can hide users from the GAL the same way that you would in your on-prem environment, but we don't have the same kinds of abilities that you would with the on-prem for customization. Okay, so how do you set up hybrid? What are the roles that you need? So a required component is directory synchronization. And Office 365 provides a 32-bit and a 64-bit directory sync. You can download it from the Office 365 administrator console. You set that up, you get your Active Directory forest syncing with Office 365. The other required component, if you've got Exchange 2007 or 2010 mailboxes, is the client access server and hub for Exchange 2010. Has to be Service Pack 1 or better. Because we're talking about hybrid here, we'd be better off with Service Pack 2, okay? Because the hybrid wizard requires Service Pack 2. So those are the required components, and what the client access server does is it allows for the web services for free busy, the mailbox moves, and the secure transport. If you have Exchange 2003 and you need to support the legacy free busy and public folders, then you'll need a mailbox role as well on 2010. Okay. So 2007 and 2010 don't use public folders for free busy. 2003 does. So you just want to be sure you've got the right components for your environment. And then lastly, what I see most of my customers using, what I see a lot of enterprises going to, is the ability to use federated IDs, which are facilitated by Active Directory Federation Services 2.0. So ADFS provides the ability for you to take a UPN suffix, let's say contoso.com, everyone's favorite domain, not to be confused with fabriccam.com, which we will not be talking about in this presentation. We take the contoso.com domain, we make sure that all of the users in AD have that UPN value, that will replicate. Office 365 will then know that that is a federated domain when you activate domain federation, and all authentication requests will be forwarded to Active Directory Federation Services through a DNS lookup. Okay, if you're not familiar with ADFS, there's lots of documentation. We're not going to go into that here, but I just wanted you to be aware that that is an optional but highly sought-after component. And for those that may be very conscious about licensing, if you're not using Exchange 2010 mailboxes, so if you've got an Exchange 2003 or an Exchange 2007 environment, you can actually call support and they will give you a license key that enables you to bring up an Exchange 2010 CAS hub and mailbox role for the purpose only of coexistence and hybrid configuration. If you have Exchange 2010 mailboxes, then you would not be eligible for that. Okay. How many of you have used the Exchange Deployment Assistant? Or even, let me ask you that, how many of you know that it's there, but you haven't used it? Okay. And then the last group would be those who have never used it and don't know that it's there. Can I see a show of hands for those people? Okay. Glad it's just a few. That's okay if you haven't used it or you don't know about it. I'm telling you about it. This is a great way not only for going to a cloud-based environment or an on-premises-based environment, but also for a hybrid environment. So you can input specific selections, and we will give you customized guidance based upon the selections that you make, and you can then go and deploy the specific components that you need to get you to where you want to be based upon the answers that you gave. So please go out and take a look at it if you haven't, and definitely use it if you're on the verge of deploying. Okay. I'm going to take a quick look now at the Service Pack 2 process, the hybrid configuration wizard. So what was new in Service Pack 2? In Service Pack 1, we still had the ability for hybrid configuration. You could go through the Exchange Deployment Assistant and you could get customized guidance. It would take you through the steps. But there were quite a few manual steps that you had to go through. Sometimes people were lucky enough to get through it without having any issues, and sometimes they didn't understand, or sometimes our language wasn't quite clear. So the end result was that it took a while to get through it. In Service Pack 2, what we've done is we've revamped that entire hybrid process to what we're talking about here. A couple of things that we did. We replaced the service domain, which we used to require you to create. And what we now do is when you set up hybrid and you want secure transport, we actually create, under the mail.onmicrosoft.com domain, a delegated fourth-level domain for your tenant specifically. We've also changed how we do the Federation Trust creation. When you're setting up the org relationship, we used to have you create the exchange delegation.contoso.com or whatever your domain was. Again, we found that that could sometimes be a little bit problematic, and sometimes we didn't have the best experience for folks who didn't understand or maybe had other things that were potentially using that domain. So now what we do is we automatically prepend a known string to the beginning of that namespace that you already have. So you don't have to do anything. We take care of it. It's a consistent set up so that the support and services folks who may be working with you understand what's been done. And that is another change that was made during the DSP2 update. And then finally is that hybrid management experience using the configuration wizard with the new commandlets that really make that come alive. So set hybrid configuration and update hybrid configuration, which we'll be talking about here in detail. As I mentioned, with Service Pack 1, it was something around 50 manual steps that you had to go through. As you'll see here, there's only 6 required to make this functional and to get you to a hybrid. What actually happens is those 50 manual steps were those steps necessary to get that Federation Trust and org relationship configured, to configure the remote and locally accepted domains, set up the email address policies. I mentioned the service domain. You had to actually set up the policies to make that and accept the domain and set that up on the mailboxes. All of the connectors are set up for you. The migration MRS proxy is configured for you. And we go through all of the prerequisite checks to make sure that when you set this up, that you actually have gotten all those prereqs done. Because one of the things that people run into or did run into with Service Pack 1 is they went through the process correctly, but they didn't have the prerequisites done. And there was really not a good way to let them know that that was the case. So we go through a lot of those checks before we start to configure things. Okay, so what is it that you have to do? Well, the first one's a little elementary, but I'm going to say it anyway, is you have to sign up for Office 365. Okay, going through the hybrid configuration wizard is not going to create the Office 365 tenant, and it's not going to get that configured for you. You do need to have an Office 365 for Enterprises tenant. If you're using small business, it will not function because there's no directory synchronization provided as part of the small business tenant. So the first thing is sign up for Office 365. Make sure that all of your domains, contoso.com, fabricam.com, xyz.com, make sure all of those are registered within Office 365. You cannot synchronize UPNs with those suffixes. You cannot synchronize SMTP proxies. You cannot use those domains in Office 365 unless they are verified. And the verification process just involves you adding a text record to your DNS so that we know that it's not just a bunch of kids in a back room trying to spoof your domain, okay? And there's very good documentation about doing this. If you've got a third-party DNS provider, we can take you through those steps. Deploy the Office 365 directory synchronization, okay, which again is a 32-bit or a 64-bit tool that you download from the Office 365 admin portal. You would then get that configured and replicate your Active Directory forest information. Once that's replicated, all of the users, the mail-enabled groups, mail-enabled contacts will be in the tenant, and you can begin using those for assignment of licenses and mailboxes, SharePoint, Link, and Office Professional Plus. Installing the Exchange 2010, so if you've got an Exchange 2003 or a 2007 organization, okay, you're not going to have a 2010 CAS. You're not going to have a 2010 hub. So you need to go through the steps to get those configured so that they're up and running on premises. You need to get public certificates for the client access server, for the hub transport server. We will do auto discover lookups. We will do TLS negotiation with the hub transport. You cannot use self-signed certificates. You have to have publicly trusted certificates on those servers. That's one of the things that I'll mention that folks sometimes bump their head against. And then publishing them, as I just mentioned, with the appropriate certificates. Another item that you want to look carefully at is what kind of firewall do you have so that communication that's going to AutoDiscover, to the other web services, that you're not asking for pre-authentication, okay? TMG, by default, sets up those publishing rules with pre-authentication. Other firewalls, you may have that enabled as well. So you want to be sure that we can do certificate auth. So it's not an anonymous connection. We do certificate auth, but you have to be sure that you don't have pre-authentication and that the request can go directly to the client access server. And then finally, you run the hybrid wizard, and the hybrid wizard will take you through ask you specific questions about your environment and about what you want to do, and then go run the update hybrid configuration commandlet and set up that environment for you. So for those who have Service Pack 2 and have looked in the Exchange Management console, there's a new organizational node. It's called Hybrid Configuration. If you click that, it takes you to the Hybrid Configuration wizard, which if you look under before using the wizard, it's going to tell you essentially the same thing that I just told you, which is please be sure to sign up for an enterprise tenant, make sure all the prerequisites are done, that you have directory synchronization, go through all those things before running this, because if you don't, you're just going to have an error and it's going to take you back there anyway. If you're unsure as to whether or not you've got connectivity, you can run the remote connectivity analyzer. Is everyone familiar with the remote connectivity analyzer? Okay. That's another great resource for Exchange, whether it's on-prem or in the cloud, so I definitely recommend using that. And then it will take you through each of these steps that we have here, and I'll walk you through these. We'll actually do it and show you what this looks like. All right, so let's go to the demo box here. All right. So I've got the hybrid configuration wizard showing here in Exchange Management Console. Okay, this is the same screen that we just looked at. First thing it's going to do is it's going to ask you for credentials. Okay, so you need to have administrative credentials for org-level administration, or what we call global administrators in Office 365, and you need to type in those credentials. Going blind in my old age here. Okay. Okay, so I've got credentials for my on-premises environment, for my Office 365 tenant. If I've entered the wrong credentials, it's going to tell me that. Okay, so it's going to go here now, and it's going to validate and authenticate me. And if I fat-fingered something, it'll come back and tell me. Okay, so I have authenticated successfully. The first thing it's going to do is it's going to ask me, what are the domains that I want to be part of this hybrid? So rule of thumb here is if you're using SMTP transport and you've got primary SMTP addresses for whatever domains that would hold true for, select those domains. So I'm going to select contosocars.com, okay, and then I'm going to see it here, and I'm going to click Next. Okay. Next thing is, just like you have to verify your domain in Office 365 to be able to use it and put a text record in DNS, I need to do the same thing for verification of the org federation. In this case, I've already done that, but I could, if I needed to, hit Control-C, and it will copy to the clipboard. I can go to Notepad, and I can paste that here, and now I can go to my DNS, and I can add that information into DNS, the record value that I need. Okay. All right. What it's asking me for here is the client access server and the hub transport server that I want to use as my on-premises hub transport and client access server. So I'm going to go and select those. I have two of them. In this case, I'm going to select EX04. Okay, and then I'm going to click Next. It's going to ask me for two things. It's going to ask me for the public IP address of the hybrid server, in this case, a hub transport, that's going to be sending mail to FOPI. Okay, Forefront Online Protection for Exchange, which is our SMTP gateway and hygiene service in the cloud. I'm going to be creating an inbound connector, and I want to know what's the IP address that I should be receiving from. Okay, so I'm going to type that in. And okay. And then it's going to ask me for the FQDN of the hub transport for the outbound connector so that it knows where it's going to send mail to. So Forefront Online Protection here is what we're configuring, right? So we're telling it what IP to expect inbound mail from and where to send outbound mail. Now, if you were going to load balance, let's say several hub transports, or you're going to load balance edge servers, you could have an FQDN that represents a virtual name for a load balancer. Okay, this is just a typical host name. We're going to use mail.kentosocars.com. Okay, so just to go back for a second. So now I've got the Forefront Online Protection side configured. It knows what my on-premises environment looks like. Because I'm going to negotiate TLS, question? Yep. So the question is, if you're already using Forefront Online Protection, so let's say you're an Exchange Enterprise Cal customer, you've been deployed and you've got Forefront protecting the edge and mail is being delivered from the internet into Forefront, okay? It's actually a different instance of Forefront Online, and it actually acts for all intents and purposes like your on-premises environment, okay? So one of the things that I'll point out is the fact that if you have that kind of a setup, it still allows you to do centralized transport. Whereas if you're not running Forefront Online today with the current version of Exchange, you can't do centralized transport with Office 365 and have mail delivered to Forefront. It all has to come through the on-prem environment. Okay. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. So I'm not sure I necessarily understand exactly what you're saying, but this has to be an Exchange 2010 Service Pack 1 or above hub transport and client access server, okay? And SP2 is definitely recommended for this. Yep, so if you think about that, again, think about that Forefront Online relaying to your on-premises environment as being on-premise SMTP delivery, okay? And then think about this as being Office 365 with Forefront Online being that SMTP relay for Office 365. The two are actually separate even though they're related. So here's my public certificate for TLS negotiation. So this is what I'm going to use for TLS negotiation. Now, here's what I was talking about a few minutes ago, where I have a couple of choices. I can choose to deliver mail directly to the cloud-based mailboxes through Forefront Online, or I can choose to force everything, both inbound and outbound. Actually, I'm sorry, this is for outbound messages from Office 365. I can have internet-bound mail coming from Office 365, going to the internet, going through Forefront Online, using that as a smart host, doing DNS lookups. So if I'm on Exchange Online and I send a message to joe@hotmail.com, that mail is going to go through Forefront Online and go out to the internet. Okay. If I select this radio button here, I have another option, and this is typically for folks. How many of you have data leakage protection or some other kind of compliance solution on premises, and you require all mail going to the internet to go through that appliance before it makes it? Okay. So it looks like there's a few. Typically, we see that in financial services and in healthcare and in other regulated industries where there has to be some checks and balances and compliance for mail going to and from the internet. So if that's the case, you would check this, and that would route everything going outbound through your on-premises gateway. Okay, Forefront Online would automatically, when a message is going to a domain that's on the internet, will use that connector to send it to your on-premises hub transport. Okay, and I'll show you this in a few minutes. I've got a few diagrams that illustrate this that may be helpful. Okay, so at this point, what's going to happen is we've set this information with our choices. We're going to now run the configuration engine through Update Hybrid Configuration. It's going to go out and make those choices. So this could take just a few minutes. I'm going to go ahead and click Manage to get that going, and we'll go back to the slides for a minute. All right, so let's just look a little bit more at how that configuration wizard actually works under the covers. Okay, so when I input all of that into the wizard, the IP address of my hub transport, the FQDN, which CASN hub I wanted to use, whether I wanted to do centralized mail routing or continue to leave it as is. All that's being recorded in the hybrid configuration object, and the set hybrid configuration is actually doing that for me. Okay. At the point at which I clicked Manage, right, I then ran Update Hybrid Configuration, which went ahead, took all that information. So it's the selections that I've made. It's going to go out. It's going to look at what the current state is and make the choices that need to be made. And I'll show you this in greater detail. Okay, if we look at it here step by step. Okay, so first we go ahead and put all that information in there. We make all the choices. We say manage. The update hybrid configuration commandlet triggers, and the hybrid configuration engine starts. Okay, it's going to read that desired state. So it's going to look at what is it that I want this to end up looking like. Okay, it's going to make remote PowerShell connections to both my on-premises environment and my Office 365 Exchange Online environment. Okay, so I'm, as you can see here, I'm connecting to both environments simultaneously. Okay, I'm going to look at those topologies and determine what the deltas need to be. Okay, if it's already configured, the one thing to mention is if you've already configured hybrid and you rerun the wizard, it can be rerun as many times as you want. If there are no changes to be made, it won't make any changes. You're not going to break anything. The best case would be that it may update something if you had made an incorrect choice or you've changed something. It will make that change, but it will not break anything or undo something that you've already done if no change has been made. Okay, so as I mentioned, based on that desired state, based upon what it's looked at in the current environment, okay, that topology data and the current configuration across both environments on premises and in the cloud, the hybrid configuration engine will look at what those deltas are, what the difference between the two are, and then it's going to execute and set the configuration to that desired state. Okay, so when all is done, and we'll go back and take a look at the one that I kicked off, and it should complete with that desired state being the end result. Okay. And while it's doing this, it's creating certain things for you, right? It's going through all those things that were very difficult to do with the Service Pack 1 version, where you had to manually know all these commandlets to go through to set up the org relationship, to set up the secure transport, to do those things that, you know, maybe you hadn't done before. So if we think about that and we think about also what could go wrong here, right? First thing that's going to happen is the hybrid configuration engine is going to authenticate. It's going to make those two remote PowerShell sessions. Okay. It's going to query the Microsoft Federation Gateway, which is a cloud service that brokers Federation, and it will look for the domain that you have said you want to go ahead and federate with. Okay. And it will make a request using SSL, and it will see if there's a federation token already there. It will then look to DNS, and it will try to discover where your auto discover record is. Okay, so it's going to try to do federation for Contoso.com. One of the steps that's involved is it has to query auto discover for Contoso.com. Okay, so getting back to the original statement about making sure everything on premises is working and you've got those public certificates, this is all part of that. Okay, so if we connect to the on-premises CAS where AutoDiscover is being published, we're going to post an AutoDiscover query. If we're successful, we're going to get back that federation information from the on-premises CAS, and we're going to complete that set of steps. Now, what happens if DNS does not have the auto discover information, or there's another reason why your auto discover is not correctly published? Maybe it's there, but it's the wrong IP or something to that effect. Well, things are going to fail, right? Because if I can't get auto discover, I can't ask for that federation information. Same thing if I have a firewall and I'm doing pre-authentication. As I mentioned earlier, if TMG is set on the listeners to do pre-authentication for web services, for auto-discover, you're going to fail because you're not going to be able to make that connection. Okay. So, oh, and also, if you are not using the correct host for auto-discover. So if you recall with Exchange 2007, we didn't have the concept of federation, right? There was no such thing, so if I make the request to an Exchange 2007 CAS, it's going to say, I don't know what you're talking about, okay? So you've got to have 2010, SP1 or better. You've got to have your DNS set up correctly. Your firewall has to allow those requests to come in. And these are the three things that we see most commonly. When we hear customers that are having issues, these tend to be the things that crop up. Okay. So we kind of talked a little bit about the secure transport and how some of that flows. I'm going to walk you through that again. If we look at the on-premises hub transport, forefront online protection that's in the cloud, that's front-ending the Exchange Online environment, okay, the first thing that's going to happen, as I mentioned, is we're going to create this domain. Used to be that service.domain that we had you create. Well, now we're going to do that. We're going to delegate a fourth-level domain under mail.onmicrosoft.com, and we're going to set up, okay, the inbound connector to FOPI for that domain. So it's going to be scoped for that domain. We're going to scope the outbound connector from FOPI for that domain on premises where you want mail delivered. Okay, so mailboxes in the cloud will send to mailboxes on premises, in this case going to contoso.com. And it will use that FQDN that you put into the wizard as your hub transport where you want mail to be delivered. Okay, and the IP address that gets put in the FOPI inbound connector is that IP that I typed in that represents, and it could be multiple IPs, that represents those hub transports or those edge servers that you're going to be sending mail from. Okay, going in the opposite direction, we have a connector, and this is going to be scoped to FOPI's IP addresses. Okay, so we kind of flip it around, send going in one direction, receive in the other. And the outbound is scoped to that contoso.com namespace that you want to send to. Okay. Now, what if I have an external recipient who's sending mail? Okay, I can have a third-party email system, and this could be Forefront Online. The gentleman here who asked the question about what if I have Forefront Online already, make the assumption that that third-party email system is Forefront Online, just for argument here and for discussion. So I could have that subscription. I could be routing inbound SMTP mail through FOPI. It's going to hit that third-party system. It's going to then hit Exchange. At the point that it hits Exchange, it's going to have a lookup done. If that user's in the cloud, what we're going to do then is we're going to route it over the connector. At the same time, this should actually be an external sender, not an external recipient, would send mail potentially directly into Forefront Online. So in the event that you don't have an on-premises MX record and you move it to the cloud, which could happen at the beginning of a deployment, it might happen sometime later, you could then deliver mail for the cloud directly into the cloud. Okay. If you have centralized transport, which means now what you want to do is you want all mail passing through your on-premises connectors for both inbound and outbound to achieve some kind of compliance goal, right? I want to do DLP on those messages. I want to log them. My manager just says he prefers or she prefers to have that stuff delivered locally. That's fine. We don't recommend it if you don't have a compliance reason to do it, okay? Doesn't mean you can't, it just means it's not really recommended. In that instance, though, we would set up the connector, the inbound FOPI connector, to require all mail to that Office 365 tenant to go through that connector. What this effectively does is it shuts off mail delivery from the internet into Forefront Online for those domains in that particular tenant. Okay? So everything has to go through the on-premises environment, through your gateways locally, and over that secure transport connector before it can get to Office 365. Okay, outbound is essentially the same, but in reverse. So now outbound, I'm going to have a star.star route, which means everything that's not bound for local delivery in Office 365 is going to hop that connector and get sent to whatever you put as the next hop, okay, which is your on-premises edge or hub transport that you defined within the hybrid wizard. So now everything that goes outbound is going to ride that, and then it's going to get routed within the local environment through your DLP or whatever you're going to route it through, and then out to the internet, okay? Now, the difference here is if I have an external sender sending me mail and they try to send it through a third party, I'm good because that's what I want. I want all the mail to come through. My MX record is on-prem, and I'm going to take delivery and I'm going to route it up to the cloud. But if they try to route it through Forefront Online directly, I'm not going to accept it. As I mentioned, we're going to make sure everything is forced through your on-prem environment, and that's a choice that you make. And we're just going to enforce that for you, okay? So just a few of the things to be aware of from a client access server perspective. We've gone through these, but just to dive one level deeper, you have to use SP1 or better on Exchange 2010, okay? Can't use 2007. You can't use an Exchange 2003 front end, It's got to be CAS, it's got to be SP1 or better. Got to have a public SSL certificate bound to it, right? Because we can't do auto-discover. We can't do the Exchange Web Services requests if you don't have a publicly trusted cert. The auto-discover namespace has got to be either in the subject or the subject alternative name within the certificate, okay? So autodiscover.contoso.com has got to be there. If it's not, things will fail. I mentioned pre-authentication. These are some of the URLs that you need to allow for anonymous access, not have pre-authentication enabled. And then lastly, if you're trying to use SSL offloading, you can do that. One of the things that you need to be aware of is with SSL offloading, we do require public certs. There are certain ways that you need to actually go about doing this. SP2 RU1 enabled this, and there's guidance. If you get these slides, you'll find that guidance. So please be sure to follow that guidance. Otherwise, you may run into issues. Okay, from a mail flow perspective, another thing that's going to break is you can't have a firewall or a third-party SMTP relay or something else between Forefront Online and your Exchange 2010 SP2 hub transport or edge server. If you do that, that authenticated header and the way that we preserve that internal status for those mail messages is going to break, okay? So I know sometimes a lot of companies don't allow Microsoft on the edge, right? It's got to be something else that sits out on the edge. If you do that, you're going to break hybrid, okay? So you can do hub transport, you can lock it down, so it's only those internal messages riding over the connector. You can put a Exchange 2010 edge server there, add one more layer, but you cannot put a third party in between or you will break the hybrid flow. And then wildcard certificates are not an issue now as long as you've got at least RU1 or above. For Service Pack 2. Absolutely. So here are some resources for you to check out. The other ones are in the slides that I mentioned, like the Deployment Assistant, definitely one that you want to look at if you haven't. MEC, so for those that have been around Exchange as long as I have, you probably remember the Microsoft Exchange Conference. It's back after 10 years. So the last one I was at was actually here right after 9/11. And we kind of did away with it for a while, but it is back. So it's going to be here in Orlando. It's not going to be at the convention center, but it will be here in Orlando. So hopefully you can make it, and we'll have a lot of content for some of the upcoming releases and things that were not discussed here. So, and I thank you. I'll take any questions if anyone's got any other questions. Otherwise, we'll give you back a little bit of time, and you guys can get ready for the party. Any other questions? I can come down, chat.